So then we will go to item six, presentation of actuarial audit by Chiron. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Bill Hallmark, and with me is Ann Harper, and we're going to go through this, the results of our audit here, if we get it up. And does this work? Yeah. Okay. So the headline is that the assumptions proposed by Siegel are, when we do an analysis, we look at a reasonable range of assumptions. We may have different opinions on where things might fall, but all of the assumptions are within the reasonable range and would be valid for using in the valuation. Now, we specifically match the observed experience on the demographic assumptions over 3 years within reasonable tolerances, but the differences we had were very minor and would not affect the assumptions. We do have a few observations we wanted to go through, but again, we'd emphasize that all the assumptions are reasonable. On the economic assumptions, we did an independent analysis. Our methodology differs from what Siegel uses, but it confirms that their assumptions are reasonable. On the demographic assumptions, we did an independent analysis of 3 years of data, because that's what we collected. And then when we got their report, we realized that they were using 6 and 9 years for some of their assumptions. So we asked them for the additional information to get 6 and 9 years so we could match their analysis. And so all of it is based on that. I'm going to run through the economic assumptions and then turn it to Ann for the demographic. And those are all the assumptions there. The two in bold are the only two I'm really going to talk about, but we can take questions on any of the others. On inflation, your assumption's 2.75, no changes proposed, and our analysis supports that. Although we do note that it's at the high end of what we consider a reasonable range, I was talking to Paul beforehand, we have a number of clients at 2.75, so it's definitely a reasonable assumption. But the things that support 2.75 are historical and what's being used by other public plans. There are a lot of other indicators that push things a little lower, and so Just to throw in some of what we typically look at, starting with the Federal Reserve's informal policy is to target 2%. And I know we're not experiencing that here in the Bay Area, but there was an article in yesterday's New York Times about how the Federal Reserve is struggling to get inflation up to 2%. It was 1.6 last year. Even though our local has been much higher than that. We also look at a survey the Federal Reserve of Philadelphia publishes that has about 40 or 50 economic forecasters from different firms. And so the left bar shows the range of their assumptions. They're looking at specifically over a 10-year period, and 75% of them are at 2.3 or lower for the next 10 years. We looked at the same Horizon survey that Siegel used, and the investment consultants' assumptions, they range from 2.2 to 2.8, with a median of 2.5, and 75% are below 2.6. Now, for the California plans, the median has been 3, with a range of 2.5 to 3.25. The other thing we look at is what's called break-even inflation, which is the difference in the market between nominal Treasury securities and inflation-protected securities of the same duration. That difference, if you thought inflation was going to be higher or lower than that, you can bet by buying one security and selling the other. So it gives you a market sense of what the break-even investment would be on inflation.
Not me.
We'll ignore. It'll stop after one more reading. That happens to the best of us.
Hey, Bill, just on this point. So 3 years ago, would you have advocated for 2.5?
3 years ago?
Yes.
Probably not.
Okay. So because 3 years ago we went to 2.75 from 3, it was not necessarily an easy decision. It was one we discussed at great length. So my question is, what's the change in the 3-year horizon that has you now at 2.5 as more the lean rather than 2.75?
I think we don't have it here, but I think if you looked at this historically, you've seen it decline. There has been much lower inflation over the last 20 years, but you look at people's expectations of where things were going, and there was more of an uptick. What we're showing here, actually, we show where it was last year and where it was 10 years ago. And 10 years ago was in the midst of the Great Recession, and so those numbers are very low, expectations on inflation. Last year, it was flat for all time periods, and now you're starting to see some minor change so that longer periods, it's slightly higher inflation. But you see these indicators change over time, and I think my recollection is 3 years ago, 2.75 was a very reasonable approach. A lot of the market indicators were lower than that. But we had been coming from a period where the market indicators had been higher.
Okay, thanks.
The other thing we'd note is Verus assumes 2 over 10 and 1.8 over 30. We looked at the survey of investment consultants, but looking at your investment consultant, that's where they are. So again, we still think 2.75 is in a reasonable range, but if anything, the forward-looking indicators are lower. You certainly get higher if you look at some historical periods, and certainly you're looking at what the plans are doing, and even the local experience here has been higher than those national indicators. So 2.75 is still very reasonable. But I think the range is moving down.
I think it's important when Bill says the local inflation is higher, because that's what really is triggering, or not triggering, but what you look to for granting your COLAs.
And presumably affects wage increases, mm-hmm. Right?
Yes, there was an article in the, I can't remember if it was in the print media or online, that you could buy a lot in Palo Alto for $9 million.
$9 million. It's got a wall in front. That's the improvement.
We have a distorted reality here in San Francisco area about what values are and what prices are.
Yeah. So looking at the investment return, your current is 7. The proposed is 7. We did an independent analysis. We use a different methodology than Siegel. We agree that 7 is reasonable. What we've put up here is based on Verus's capital market assumptions, looking at the nominal returns. That puts 7 at about the 50th percentile over both the 10 and 30-year periods. We did notice you were looking at 6.75, and we just comment that you could also, if you went to 6.75, then you could look at reducing the price inflation assumption at the same time. And on a nominal basis, under this model, 6.75 would give you a 55% confidence level instead of 50. So all the other economic assumptions we thought were reasonable, had no significant comments. So I'm going to turn it to Ann for the demographic.
So before I get into the comments that we have on the demographic assumptions, I'm going to have an overview of what we look at and how we assess assumptions, and then the information that's provided in actuarial reports for experience studies. So for each assumption that Siegel has studied, they give us the actual rates of decrement, like an actual rate of retirement, the current assumed rate, and the proposed rate. We feel that strongly that in the report you should also include the actual decrements or the actual number of retirements at each age and service group, also the actual exposures, and that means the actual members who are eligible for retirement, to calculate what we call an actual to expected ratio. And the actual to expected ratio is the actual number of retirements over the expected number of retirements based on your current assumptions. I'm gonna flip to slide 13 first to talk a little bit more about those actual to expected ratios. So these ratios you're able to assess the assumptions across all service groups or age groups, so it doesn't matter whether or not you're looking at age or service. You can look at the experience for the any ratios on both. And ideally what you want to see is that that actual to expected ratio is close to 1, which that what that means is that the actual number of retirements that you see in your experience study period will be close to what you're expecting those number of retirements to be. So if you have ratios that are not closer to 1, there should be some, there might be a suggestion that you're going to change those ratios so that when you look forward, your experience is going to be more in line with what you see the actual experience being. So Siegel does provide this information in the report when you're looking at their mortality rates, but not for the other demographic assumptions. And we did a calculation, for example, for your general Tier 3 group and for members who are over who have over 30 years of service in the current assumptions show that that ratio is 1.12%. So in this case, the actual to expected ratio is greater than 1. That means there are more retirements happening than you were expecting. So you would want to raise the expected or the number of expected retirements so that ratio is more in line with 1. And that's just what Siegel did. They raised that retirement, so now their A&E ratio is actually 1 for that group. But it's a better assessment of how the proposed and the current assumptions, how far off they might be from the actual experience. Now going back to another way that we assess the assumptions is we develop what are called 90% confidence intervals to really determine the credibility of your experience. And when I say credibility, I don't mean if it's good or bad data. I'm talking about the fact that if it's enough data to make a reasonable assumption or recommendation on. So you see here in the graph here, we have these 90% confidence intervals, and these are three specific sets of data. The first set is where you only have 10 people, and I'm going to use retirement again for the example, where you have 10 people who are eligible for retirement, and one person retires. So that's a 10% retirement rate. But you can see, because there's so little data, that the confidence that your rate is actually at 10% is not as great as when you have more data. So here, the real rate really falls somewhere between 30% on the high end and all the way down to 0%. But if you have more exposures, to the right here, you have 1,000 exposures and 100 retirements, the same rate, right? Same 10% retirement rate, but you have a much greater confidence that that rate is within that confidence interval. So when we looked at the retirement rate assumptions, Siegel had one set of retirement rates based on age for all service groups. And they split those retirement rates now into two different groups, those with 30 or more years of service and those with less than 30 years of service. And this does result in a significant improvement in the assumptions, such that people who have more years of service given the same age will have a higher benefit, so it's more likely that they will retire. and we agree with this approach. However, the data does suggest that you might want to consider moving the assumptions or creating another tier of assumptions for those who are under 20 years of service. And we would consider applying the same pattern across all the tiers. Okay, so this chart here is showing your current actual to expected ratios across three different tiers and for three different service groups. Focus on general tier one. So, like I said before, Siegel had one set of assumptions for all years of service. And you can see 30 plus years of service, your A&E ratio is over one, which means there are more retirements happening at that service group than you're expecting. So you'd want to raise the retirement rates for that group, and that's what Siegel did. And then for the service less than 30 years, you can see their A&E ratios are less than one. So there are less actual retirements than you were expecting, so you can decrease those rates. However, you can see that between 20 and 29 years of service, that those retirement rates are actually higher than the 20 years. So there is room to decrease the rates for those less than 20 even further based on the experience. And this is the 6 years worth of experience. This shows in pictures what I was just saying. It's got the different age groupings at the bottom, starting with 50 to 54, all the way up to 65 to 69. On the most left-hand side, the pink, it looks like pink. It was yellow in our but now it's pink. The pink boxes are the experience for service less than 20. The blue box is experience for 20 to 29 years of service, and then the purple bars are the experience for 30 plus years of service. So you can see that there are definitely different rates for the different service groups, and the actual rates are the boxes, the actual observed rate for this study, and then the diamonds there are the proposed rates that Siegel has proposed for the study. And you can see that the proposed rates for the groups for less than 20 years of service, the proposed rates are a little bit high and outside those confidence intervals. So there are slightly different patterns for the general tier three, and then also we're going to show safety, but it's still the same result where you're seeing those proposed rates from Siegel with less than 20 years of service are slightly higher than the actual rates.
Would you conclude, based on all this data, that sort of the money shot is that it's not material, though? I mean, in other words, is it material to the assumption we're making or not?
We did not measure the materiality of it. It would be a better defined assumption, but we do agree with Siegel with their assumption that 30, that splitting it out based on just the two different groups is acceptable and reasonable.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get whether you think, based on all of this analysis, that there's an infirmity in the assumptions that are the next item on our agenda. Because if there is, I'd like to know it. If not, I want to know that too.
I would say that it's not significantly material. There could be a little bit of a lowering of cost because we're assuming we would be reducing.
For some people, with short service, staying longer would be more expensive because the value of the additional benefit they accrue is greater. So, but for others, they have sufficient service, so the earlier retirement is better. So you'd have to actually run the cost numbers to determine the impact. What we're saying is the data shows there is a difference in behavior that could be reflected in the assumption. But we also agree that the proposed assumptions are reasonable.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the net cost impact could go either way.
Yeah, it could, because you could have a balance between the people now getting more value by deferring retirements and people getting less value by deferring retirements.
So making those adjustments, you wouldn't necessarily think that there would be a significant change to the numbers, though, if we were to implement this?
I don't think there would be a significant change. There may show the same. Go back to the AE ratios.
Yeah, no.
The one place where it was really dramatic was the safety group. Their AE ratio for less than 20 is 0.16. So they clearly seem to be staying till they at least get 20 years of servicing. So that's where there's really a much more dramatic difference. Now, what the cost impact of that, I'm not positive, but that could have
to each his own.
An impact.
Rusty? So I was just wondering again, if we knew the population for each of these groups, and related to that, the payroll size of each of these groups, under 20, 22, 29, and over 30, if that made any difference in terms of the cost, because we are using payroll to determine the amount of contribution. I had no, just escaped me. I'll come back to you. But anyway, just apparently we don't know the population for each of these groups, how big a group. They're all equally the same. And the other question was, what is the average number of years of service one retires with? Is it under 20 years of service, or do we know those questions? Would they play into determining the cost?
Greater than 20.
If you were to go with this scheme here as opposed to the proposed scheme.
Well, I think the average retirement rate is just when people are retiring. It's like the average of those. And so we're really looking at when people have retired in the last 6 years. And so I'm not sure the average retirement rate would be an indicator, would give you any more information at this point.
And we do have the counts for each of those groups. We just didn't bring them in the presentation. But
okay.
So moving on to mortality, which is a very talked about subject in the actuarial world these days, and I'm not going to talk about it much because we agree with what Siegel has suggested, and they have moved to the benefit weighted table and benefit weighted analysis, which we agree with, and we also agree that using the most updated projection scale for recommending or for looking at forward looking mortality is also best practice. So the last area of potential consideration is with the disability incidence. We are not recommending any changes in the assumption, but looking more towards how they're reviewing this assumption. And I'm going to turn to our graphs because it's much easier to look at a picture, I think, than to get the idea of what's happening. So this is the experience for disability. On the left side, we have the general tiers 3 and 5, and then on the right-hand side, we have the safety. So the current study, which covered 3 years of data, is the very far left purple bar. And all of the experience for the 3 years that we had, there were only 55 disabilities between both general and safety. So it's a very limited amount of data with disability, and that's typically the case with public sector plans. So you can see the proposed assumption is above the confidence interval based on the current experience study data. However, based on the prior data, the previous 3 years, it's right in line. And then when we combine the data using 6 years worth of data, that proposed assumption is just right on the top of that confidence interval. So what we're proposing, and Siegel has done with some of their other assumptions, they did it with mortality and with retirement, is using more data when they're setting the assumption, because you just get a better picture of what that experience looks like, especially when you don't have a lot of it. And the same is true then for the disability, for safety is, you know, the proposed assumption is a little bit high looking at the current study, but when you combine them, it's really right in line. So what we're suggesting there, again, is just using more data and then to continue to monitor for the next study the rates for three general tiers 3 and 5. The other assumptions that we reviewed were the termination rates, the leave out or leave cash out rates, and also the unused sick leave. And we agree with all of Siegel's recommendations on that, and they are reasonable.
So just to wrap up, we do think the assumptions Siegel proposed are reasonable. There are some considerations. You could reduce the price inflation assumption. We said particularly if you decide to reduce the discount rate. We do think you should consider splitting the retirement assumptions into three service groups, either now or the next study. On disability retirements, we think you should use at least 6 years of data. What happened in our analysis is we were looking at three and thought the rates were too high and then said, no, we should add more data and get something more and determine that those rates were reasonable. And then in the report for the demographic assumptions, we're asking for a few other disclosures that we find are commonly disclosed in reports and allow particularly an actuary reviewing the report to have a better sense and confidence in what the conclusions are. So that's it.
Any questions or comments?
Same question that Scott raised, a little bit different. Yeah, I appreciate the job you did, and but it came down to sort of an analogy I would draw maybe with Dr. McDonald. If you've got two patients, the same patient, two different surgeons, and you basically end up with the same result, then aren't we talking about possibility of style versus substance? I mean, there's different ways to get to the same conclusion, and how can you argue with the results? When I read your report, and I appreciate all the work you put into it, it said all of Siegel's stuff was reasonable, and I felt like saying, any questions? The rest of stuff looks like it might be, well, you could do this, you could do that, you might be considering this, you might give some thought to that, but otherwise they're fine. That's where I left.
Well, that's exactly right.
Yeah. That's where it is the assumptions are reasonable. I think on the investment assumption, I think it's useful to have two different methods that get you to the same answer. That gives you a little more confidence in that result. I think there are some rooms, but these are very minor comments.
That's what I got out of it, too. Right. Okay, thank you.
Right.
And I guess I'd ask Paul and John, but when I look at this, the fourth bullet point looks to me, if they can do that without significant additional cost, certainly a reasonable thing to add to their report. No issue on that. The others... I'm perfectly comfortable if Paul and John are comfortable with what they assumed. Do you have a desire? Do you think it makes sense to points 2 and 3 up there, splitting retirement assumptions into three service groups and using 6 years of data?
Yeah, I think this falls in the category of the reaction to audit recommendations fall in three categories. There's an, we need to fix this now. There's, you know, we agree to disagree, and then there's those are helpful, but I think that they're not immediate enough to require action in this study, but we will absolutely take them under advisement in the next study. In fact, the fact that we did the break between under 30 and over 30, that is something that was brought to us by previous audits. So we really gain a lot of information from audits. I think these are all future consideration items. We did an overhaul in our experience study report about 4 years ago. We're looking at another one, and I think these confidence bands, which again, we actually look at those internally. We just haven't put them in our report. So we think that that's a reasonable suggestion, again, for future conversation. On the retirement, you know, it's just a matter of how many boxes you want to slice it into. But I would say that that the split at under 30, over 30 doesn't need to be the last refinement we do there. But I think these all fall into helpful suggestions for considerations in future studies.
Okay. Any other trustee questions or comments? Any comments from the public?
May I ask one question?
Yes.
Thank you. Bill, on the price inflation, you said that Siegel's proposed price inflation is at the top end of the reasonable range. What's the reasonable
not range? The top. It's at the at the high end.
I'm sorry, high end. So what is your reasonable price inflation range that you would say anybody falling into this would be reasonable?
I think, and we may have some differences on exactly where we fall, but I think somewhere between 2 and 3, I'm a little nervous at 3 being off the high end.
2 to 3.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I would agree with that, yeah.
Okay. I had just a quick question. I haven't personally delved into this, but it's my understanding that there is not a separate assumption made for PEPRA versus legacy employees as to the age of retirement, that it's blended
no,
in
there
one
is.
Pool. That strikes me as...
So they're separate,
assumptions. Okay. So we focused our analysis on the non-PEPRA tiers because the PEPRA tiers don't have any retirement to analyze.
So separate assumptions are used.
There are separate assumptions, and they've made adjustments based on what they anticipate the experience will be, given the different structures. And those changes look reasonable, but it's not based on a data analysis.
Any other questions from the public? Okay, thank you very much for this report.